We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by Indeed and BetOnline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And we're at a point of free agency where the picture of what the 2020-2021 Lakers are going to be is starting to emerge more and more. And I am incredibly excited about it. There's some things that have been announced. We've got the Dennis Schroeder trade, Wes Matthews at the time of recording. Nothing else has been announced at the time of this recording, but we do have a couple of other reports. In this pod, I really want to talk about part of why I'm so excited about this team is I've been thinking about the idea of being a star in your role. And there are a lot of guys that we've either officially already added or have been reported that are coming that are a star at doing what they do. There's a lot of fastest, most explosive, a lot of superlatives that in what they do, they have a lot of ESTs at the end of what they do, or right, that their Schroeder is one of the fastest point guards in the NBA. Wes Matthews is very stocky and stout, right? And we'll get to some of the reported guys as well. But let's get up to speed on what's happened since last time we had a show. So Darius, where do we stand at the time of recording?
So as you said, Pete, the Lakers have actually announced that they have traded Danny Green for Dennis Schroeder. So Schroeder is in. They have also announced that they have signed Wes Matthews to, I believe, a one-year deal. The one-year deal part is being reported. I don't think the Lakers confirmed that, but I haven't actually looked at the report, so shame on me there. And so Wes Matthews is in. There's been a slew of other moves that have been reported, however, right? And so the Lakers have reportedly agreed to a deal with Montrezl Harrell, formerly of the Clippers. They have reportedly agreed to a deal with Marc Gasol in terms of trying to get Marc Gasol on to the team. The Lakers have reportedly traded JaVale McGee to the Cleveland Cavaliers and will receive back Alphonso McKinney, who is a wing player, small forward, and Jordan Bell, who is sort of a combo 4-5, but more of a power forward type. And so there's been further reporting about what will happen to those players who Jordan Bell may be waived. Alphonso McKinney may be kept on the team. But you're now looking at a potential roster that's going to not only include Dennis Schroeder and Wes Matthews, but will include Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell. And also the Lakers have reportedly agreed to bring back Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So that's a lot of action since the last time we recorded on Friday. It's been, we said this, right, guys, that we were expecting sort of a fast moving, fast and furious free agency period. And that's exactly what we've seen.
As you were saying that, Darius, the email and tweet came out from the Lakers about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So that is now official. At the time of recording, when people are listening to this, of course, this will have been old news. But that was a key one. And we mentioned that a couple of days ago, the last time that we recorded, that especially when losing Danny Green, that KCP's ability to play both ends is the way that he flows off LeBron and AD on offense, the way that he can chase and pressure guards around the perimeter. Those are all extremely critical to how the Lakers want to play. And also, I think this now enables them, if you just take a group that closed games for the Lakers last year, was at times LeBron, AD, Caruso, Kuz, and KCP. And now, sometimes it was Green in for Kuzma, or you know, somebody else may have been in there, Markieff Morris in the playoffs, Rondo at certain times. But I like the fact that they have at least one really good lineup of guys that has played together, that do know that what the structure of the team is, that can then plug in a guy, whether it's a Schroeder or whether it's a Matthews, whether it's one of the reported players that's coming in. So it's this mix, Pete, of continuity, at least enough continuity from your run it back championship roster, but you also get legitimately major talent upgrades in other parts of the roster. So they, I really appreciate the way that Pelinka threaded the needle in this context. And it's definitely exciting to envision how this team is going to play together.
Look, man, and I'm probably going to beat this idea to death, so I apologize in advance for the how many times I'll probably say this upcoming season. An NBA season can go sideways in dozens of different ways. There's a lot of work that needs to be done between now and the ultimate goal. But in terms of talent on this roster, this is a phenomenally put together roster. And it's to that point, Mike, of that idea of continuity, that idea of building off of something that's already established. And then everybody that we brought in specializes in something. And that's why I very much have approached, and we still got a couple more roster spots to fill out, of course, but I've approached this team and an offseason from the idea of, I want to look back on it rather than every individual move on its own. The idea of this team is LeBron and Anthony Davis, and everybody else has to fill a role to some degree, right? I think the term, and Rob mentioned this on a press conference, in his press conference recently, the idea of being a role player can be a pejorative, right? But the idea of being a star in your role is, role players are asked to do certain things, right? Like if I want to run high ball screens, I might not give the ball to Wesley Matthews, right? And that's not what he does. But if I need somebody to body up a wing and make sure that he doesn't give up ground or check a cutter, I know who I can call. I've got somebody on the bench who's one of the best in the game at doing that, just that particular aspect of the game. Marc Gasol, right? One of the things I was a little sad about, and this is ironic considering how the conversation about him for years was Rondo's departure. there being a little bit of a brilliance and wizardry kind of walking out of the door, right? Of these like super high IQ guys, even for the NBA. And Marc Gasol is one of those guys. He's one of the smartest. He's to me, like, I'm curious what you think of this, having seen a lot of this guy play. To me, he's a lot like Warriors' Andrew Bogut, but capable of spacing the floor, right? He's going to average like 6 points and 5 rebounds and going to have an amazing plus minus because he knows how to defend. He knows he's an excellent playmaker. You can run elbow series. You can run delays. We can run a lot more set offense than we did last year with him as kind of a trigger man for a lot of those plays rather than just relying on LeBron to do that. So it just adds like different dimensions to the team. And you go to Harrell is, I can't wait to talk about Harrell. He's the guy that I've watched the most tape on so far at the time of recording, but everybody does a thing. And they do it really well. They do that thing. And there are sometimes when that thing's not going to be appropriate, where that guy gets his butt kicked by this particular team because he doesn't match up well. You don't have to go to that guy. You've got somebody else that you can go to that does kick ass at the thing that counters that. Like we were talking about Jokic in the last pod, right? And like, well, we got a big body for Dwight. Marc Gasol is one of the best Jokic defenders in the NBA. The Jokic and Embiid types, the types that they can give AD a problem. Like Mike's right. We were talking on the last pod about how like AD is going to win some of those battles because he's Anthony freaking Davis, right? But Jokic will win more of those battles against AD than AD gives up against almost anybody, right? Now you got somebody and you don't have to have AD banging with him. You know what I mean? And so just, I am through the roof excited about the different shape-shifting possibilities of this team.
That idea of shape-shifting is something that the Lakers relied heavily on last season, right? And I think this is where it bears mentioning the guys that the Lakers lost, right? And so Danny Green is gone and Dwight Howard is gone and JaVale McGee is gone and Rajon Rondo is gone. The Lakers have effectively replaced pretty much all of those players with either a guy who's in-house who is stepping up. I would imagine that, like, for example, a guy like Alex Caruso or even KCP would take over for the Bradley role, which is effectively what we saw last season to close the year during the playoffs and the restart when Bradley did not go to Orlando. But in terms of like player archetypes, right? The Lakers have replaced those guys and added, but with those guys, the players who will become coming in, they all have a different type of skill set as well that can be added into the mix that can further diversify what this team can be. Now, there are some ways that you could argue that this team may take a step or a half a step back defensively, but they're on paper, at least they project to be able to take, you know, 2-3 steps forward offensively, which is a massive boon for a team that just won the NBA championship. And that, Mike, last pod, you read that Pelinka quote to me about complacency and how he was not going to allow that to creep in, and the idea that they were going to be aggressive in the free agent market. And I'd love to get your thoughts on, just from a mindset perspective, because when we talked about running it back, there was this idea of, you know, some change is good, too much change could be tricky, but as long as they're upgrading, you would probably be happy. I don't want to assume that reported moves are going to be final, but in projecting out with the type of change that the Lakers are projecting to make here, what is your mindset around the makeup of the team and positives versus negatives, steps forward versus steps back, and all of that?
It all makes a lot of sense. And that's the first thing there hasn't been a move that's been either reported or officially put out by the team that's been a head scratcher, which, you know, in year in a, I guess a couple of years ago and years past, right? There was a player or two acquired where it just was kind of not quite adding up, but everything that we've seen so far adds up pretty nicely on paper. So what we have on paper so far is excellent. In terms of continuity, we'll see if, for example, Markieff Morris is still out there. He's as a free agent, unrestricted free agent. So that's is he a possibility to return? We don't know yet. Jared Dudley, right? Like having another veteran holdover who was so key in the locker room. Like if there's a spot for him, that would be nice too, to just increase that continuity. But there is enough continuity, as I mentioned with the first comment, with being able to close games with that five that knows how to play together. And by the way, Montrezl Harrell signing official, yes. people now will, we just got the email from the Lakers. So that one is official as well. And as Pete mentioned, we'll do a whole podcast on Harrell and just all of the stuff that goes around that. But touching on him within this context, it's just, what I'm curious to see is now that you have Harrell and Schroeder, that in its own right can be a screen roll offense, right? But what you don't want, I think you don't want to get too far into that like the Clippers did last year, where it was sort of Lou Williams and Harrell did their thing, and then Kawhi and Paul George ran a totally different kind of offense, and there wasn't the best synchronicity between that four. Like I think that the way that the Lakers play, though, will take care of that. And LeBron's presence in particular, as that guy that's the uniter on the court that is running everything. And Darius, if you want to check in on that. But that's one area where I think, like, wow, incredible upside. These two alone could just come in and give you a ridiculous bench offense. But, you know, how does Vogel work that within the team context that they established last season?
Well, I would talk even more within the context of skill sets, right? Which is a conversation that we've talked about a lot. And if you were to draw a Venn diagram of Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol, uh-huh. right? You know who's in the middle of that Venn diagram? Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because with a player like Harrell, who eats 15 feet and in, right? Post ISO scorer, pick and roll dive man, can play above the rim, can hit the offensive glass, right? That's one skill set. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a player like Marc Gasol who can play more pick and pop, delay action player,
passer.
Really smart.
Can run the offense passer as a passer.
Mm-hmm. Right. And AD in the bubble was doing a lot more of that stuff as well, right? Playing at the top of the floor, shooting the three ball, playing pick and pop more. He had great chemistry with Alex Caruso, for example, in round one, playing pick and pop against the Blazers, right? And when Mike's talking about the idea of like a single pairing maybe floating too far out here, right? And maybe not being as involved, I actually think the type of bridge players that the Lakers have with a LeBron, obviously, but with an Anthony Davis too, that there's going to be room for these guys to function within what the type of offense that the Lakers can build out based off of the unique and broad talents that players like LeBron and Anthony Davis bring, right? So when you look, because when I look at like Harrell and Lou Williams versus what Paul George and Kawhi are good at, there is no middle of the Venn diagram there, right? But with the Lakers, I think you're going to have enough overlap of skill sets between the main players who you're looking at every night, LeBron and AD, and a lot of the other guys who have the ability to sort of carry an offense within the scope of their role, that there's overlap there. And so you can build something out that I think is much more sustainable and show more congruency.
I would, if I had to guess, I would imagine that Matthews and Gasol will start, and Gasol would be the, you know, the guy that spares AD from unnecessary minutes at the five again,
yes,
against, you know, bigger players. It's a bit of a slower unit, right? But Gasol is very different from JaVale. And I just want to take a moment to thank JaVale, thank Rondo for just really a great year in particular, and just for their time with the Lakers, wishing them luck in what they're doing going forward. But JaVale and Marc Gasol are very different types of players. I suspect that our half-court offense will be significantly better with the starters with Gasol, because he can both space the floor and he's a playmaker, right? You can move LeBron a little bit off of the ball with some elbow series touches. Just some of the stuff they can do with screens, man. I can't wait. And then the second unit is speed. Yeah.
Real quick on Gasol, and then to get back to your point, the thing that I think first about is his defense, though. So he led the Raptors in net rating last year, but they were 98.8 when he was on the floor from a defensive rating, and 106.6 when he was off the floor. So the numbers got, he didn't play as well in the bubble. Neither did Harrell, obviously. And that these are things we can get into as to why, but that is part of what excites me about, you know, some of the defensive personnel that the Lakers lost, right? And you mentioned Bradley, I think Danny Green, et cetera, Dwight, JaVale, that Mark's being so smart back there. And it's like a different kind of rim protection. He's not going to go up and block a million shots at the rim, but his positioning is going to be so elite there. So let me get back to your point on it, but just the defense he provides is exciting.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the defense that he provides is exciting, but it's also different, right? That's one thing that I think in terms of an attribute where we've taken a pretty significant step back is our shot blocking. Now, rim protection comes in different forms other than just shot blocking, but neither Harrell nor Gasol are the shot blockers that Dwight and JaVale are, right? They are, again, we'll get into Harrell. We'll do a whole pod on him. Harrell has some defensive ability that I really think matches our scrambling units. And so that, to me, there's not. So again, we'll get into more of this, but like Doc Rivers had him in drop coverages a ton, and
yuck.
Yeah. It like does not match his skill set at all. It's like it's an NFL Sunday. It's like And it's like putting a 4-3 defensive end in a 3-4 scheme as a defensive end and not moving him to outside linebacker, but having him stay at the defensive end. And all of a sudden he's not good anymore, right? It's like it's a scheme that he's great at covering space and distance, right? Harrell is so explosive. That's why when that news broke, and I'm talking to most of my friends, and you guys can attest to this, that night I was just like, oh my God, I didn't even think of Harrell. That was not somebody that I thought was in our range. I'm aware of all of the flaws. Again, I've got a lot to say on that. It's for a different show, but Harrell's one of the most explosive players in the NBA. He's one of the best offensive big men in the NBA. I've been watching their playoff series, all of them, not just this season, but last year against the Warriors. And I'll get into why later. He shot 20 for 24 in the first two games of that series against the Warriors 2 years ago in the playoffs. He shot 73% from the field for the series against the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins. All of them were healthy for that series. And he shot 70. Draymond could not handle him physically. He is a monster physically. Does he have flaws that can be exposed? Absolutely. But this is my point, is that if he's going up against somebody that can expose those flaws, you know who we played who at the five instead? Anthony Davis. Or Marc Gasol, if Trez can't body Jokic. So, but if you got bad pick and roll defense, or if you've got a big who's slow footed and you can throw the ball to Harrell, who's a better ball handler than I expected him to be, 18 feet from the hoop, and he just blows by him and dunks on him. Go watch, if you're listening to the show, go watch Montrezl Harrell highlights. Just trust me on that. What's up?
Well, I just want to redirect this to Darius, because there's one thing as you're talking about this that I'm thinking about with Harrell on the court with LeBron and AD, and just the sheer ridiculous amount of attention that AD and LeBron draw in a different way from Kawhi and Paul George, just because of the pressure that they put on the rim.
We're going to tear the freaking rim down, Mike.
And so when those guys are doing anything, Darius, there's Harrell in the dunker spot. And it's different. Like JaVale McGee actually did this, some of this stuff quite well. So did Dwight Howard, but it's just a different level of movement and tenacity with Harrell, where like, if that ball's anywhere around the cylinder, all of a sudden it's getting dunked and he's screaming at the rim and then running back. Like that's going to be happening a lot. Right.
The thing I love about Harrell is his motor and his want for the damn ball. Right. And so I don't know what the hustle stats say. Right. And I don't even know if these will accurately capture what you see when you watch him play. But Harrell is a monster just going to the front of the rim and in chasing loose balls that are coming off of the backboard that are shot by teammates. Right. And there are few players in the league, as Mike, you just mentioned, that draw more offensive attention from wherever, from whatever position they are on the floor than LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You have to account for them at all times. And because they are not pure wings and they can eat themselves in the post and will then drive closeouts, will drive isolations right to the front of the rim. Almost every aspect of those guys' games is help oriented, right? They are both superstar offensive players that on any team that they are on are going to be the focal point of a defensive game plan. And this is why the Lakers, Mike, I'm sure this is why you had them as championship favorites last season, basically from the moment that the Lakers got Anthony Davis. It's that fact. This guy would be the guy that the defenses are keying on every single second that he's on the floor, except, oh, wait, there's another guy just like that who he's sharing the floor with. And the amount of attention, you almost always want to say two or three guys are going to be in a position to stop or slow this player down, except you've got two that are on opposite sides of the court. Who's going to benefit off of that is all of the other teammates, right? And we saw that with the Lakers last season. Harrell, from his position as sort of like, I'm going to get to the front of the rim myself. I'm going to attack offensive rebounds. I can be a release valve in the pick and roll. I can be a release valve as like a shallow post player, right? Where he then turns and faces and then just attacks. Those are the type of release valves that the Lakers simply did not have last season with any of their complementary players. But Harrell is one of those guys. You know who else is one of those guys? Dennis Schroeder.
One of those guys too. This is what I was going to jump in with. And he does it in a completely different way, right? He does that with speed. And that's the thing, is that pressure on the rim that Mike was talking about, that Harrell is going to be putting, Schroeder does that too. And it's in a completely different way. So that's what part of it's, we're still built around this same concept of putting pressure on the front of the rim, but we've got guys who do it differently in like, this, like Trez is more similar to young Dwight from the perspective of like, I'm going to dunk on you over and over and over again than the Dwight that we had last year, right? Dwight was still an excellent lob threat, but he was not a guy who like Trez is a guy, is a 19-7 guy in less than 30 minutes per game. And obviously we know, you know, way more to look into than that, but he's like, he's shot 63% from the field for his career. He's like a 25% usage guy. He's not somebody who's just catching lobs, right? You can throw him the ball, clear out that entire side of the court. And if he's got a slow-footed dude on him, he's going to blow past him and dunk on him. If he's got a smaller guy on him, he's going to back his ass down and either get to the line or get an and one or get a layup or dunk on him too. Like, this is one of the most ferocious players in the NBA. And yes, he's got flaws. Yes, and these are things we're going to get into. But again, that amount of pressure that we're going to be able to put on the front of the rim, I cannot wait. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to geek out about the team that we're starting to see come together.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. You can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it, and fast. Try Indeed out with our $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offers valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So I wanted to talk about the bench a little bit, right? I suspect that Matthews and Gasol will start for Danny and JaVale, and they will fill their roles. And that first unit will be a little bit on the slower side. And then coming off the bench, you have Dennis Schroeder, Alex Caruso, Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, right? And then one of LeBron or Anthony Davis, right? Last year, it was AD first. He'd close that end of the first quarter, end of the third quarter minutes. And then LeBron would start the second quarter, start the fourth quarter with AD on the bench. So again, I want to repeat, say it's the same as last year. LeBron James, Alex Caruso, Dennis Schroeder, Kyle Kuzma, and Montrezl Harrell. You know how fucking fast that team is? That lineup is a stampede. And I'm sorry, I just want to focus on that for a moment. If they play hard, man, yeah, I'm so excited about the possibilities.
Well, one of the things that you get with a little bit less continuity, you have the potential to get a little bit more fire from guys that haven't won before. And when you combine that and say, you know, Schroeder and Harrell specifically, and then, you know, Matthews, who is just sort of like that, that's why an undrafted guy, you know, is 25th in three-pointers made by this point of his career, because he's got that tenacity to stay in the league for all this time. That is super informative, I think, about what you're saying as well. And there's a possibility that the Lakers have the best starting lineup and the best bench in the NBA. Now there are units that we can pull out for comparison's sake, and you know, last year in terms of net rating, not to go down that wormhole again, Milwaukee had a lot of those lineups, right? Well, especially with the starting lineup, but just in terms of talent, what it is going to take some time to fit together. But like this is the other thing that I enjoy about this though, is that Vogel could very well start either Caruso or Kuzma and have Matthews off the bench. If he wanted to, he could start Schroeder. He could start Harrell. Like at different times, but the point is that you can mix and match all of these guys around LeBron and AD as your main core once again. In KCP too, I think he sort of is slotted in there now, right? As that guaranteed guy that's going to be starting alongside LeBron, and in particular with Green being gone as that two-way guy for sure. But that's all. It's all exciting. I mean, we're gonna need, how many pods can we get in before a training camp starts,
bro?
We're gonna need some time. We're gonna need some time to get into all these guys.
Yes.
The bench. So look, if you were to rattle off the strengths of last year's team, I would say that defense is at the top. Right behind that, we already mentioned one was the ability to threaten the front of the rim, especially in the half court, which I think is super important. Number three would almost likely be transition.
transition offense. And it was something we were able to maintain all the way through the finals, right? It wasn't something that
went up in the playoffs.
It did.
It went up in the playoffs. The percentage of Lakers offense generated off of transition. Now,
part of that's LeBron. Part of that's LeBron just like, all right, it's playoff time. Yeah,
for sure.
Let's go.
Well, I would say, too, that there's a direct correlation between getting a defensive stop and being able to run, right?
Rondo.
Yep.
So I don't want to diminish the idea that if the Lakers do take a step back defensively, I think it will impact their transition offense. That said, they have doubled and tripled down. When you talk about the bench specifically, Pete, the idea of Harrell grabbing a defensive rebound, outletting to Schroeder, and then running wide a la like James Worthy did for like the Showtime Lakers.
He can handle it too. He can even lead the break.
Grab and go.
All three.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then so Caruso can do the same thing if it's LeBron who's on the floor with those guys, obviously. So if it's AD, the same, obviously. Right. So
So Schroeder, Harrell, LeBron, AD, and KCP, that lineup is just blazing.
Right. Yeah. It's just mill your face off, man. Yeah.
That one, you know, Caruso could do that too. But yeah, so that's go ahead, Darius. Sorry.
Just like all those guys there, besides Gasol and Matthews, which I think they will bring a different element to transition. I think Matthews can definitely sprint to deep corner, right? The same way that KCP does. He won't do it with the same speed, but he will offer similar gravity if he's able to get up court that way.
Well, and he can fill wing too. If KCP or Kuz are filling deep corner on that same side, Matthews can hit that wing three. He's good at that shot.
Exactly. But Matthews and Gasol can also both be trail three options, right? Yeah. Which is something that the Lakers have not had a lot of those guys. Danny Green was one of the only guys who could be a trail three threat. Anthony Davis could do it too, but he wanted to get to the front of the rim, right? And so there, the ability with Gasol especially, one of the things I'm super excited about with him is trail three ability, but also the bringing back of delay action.
Yeah, we can run half court sets, yes.
That, well, also too, early offense. So when one of the things that LeBron especially is so good at,
I know where you're going with this, yes,
is making in play decisions on, okay, is transition there? Push, right? Okay, no, it's not there. Let's get into early offense. That's not there. Okay, back it out. Let's run something, right? But with Gasol is going to make early offense that much more potent for the Lakers as a trail option who you can run delay action through, delay and then dribble handoff, right? And so the Lakers can have pet actions built into their early offensive sets that they simply did not have last season, simply by the presence of having a big man who is as much of a passer and decision maker as Gasol. One of the things that I was super excited about personally last season with the prospect of DeMarcus Cousins being on this team, and we talked about this, Pete, was the idea that the Lakers' big men were going to be put into more playmaking positions and that they actually had the guys who could thrive at doing that. Well, didn't work out with Cousins. Knee injury. He missed the entire season. And so the Lakers quickly pivoted to Dwight Howard. And that worked out wonderful, right? Obviously. But with a player like Gasol, you bring back into the fold a lot of that ability to then play through the top of the key. And all of those handoff actions that the Lakers did through horn sets and all of that stuff, what do you think that's going to look like when it's Marc Gasol, either at the elbow or at the top of the key, where you can run action through him that can get a Wesley Matthews a corner three off of a wide pin down action with Anthony Davis, right? Or get that same shot for KCP with a wide pin down action with LeBron. Imagine if it's running the offense through the top of the key with Marc Gasol, LeBron goes to set a wide pin down for KCP. He sets that screen. KCP darts off and LeBron cuts back door, right? Off of that screen. All of this stuff can build on top of itself. And you've just got smart offensive players, but in different positions on the floor than you had them last season. And it opens up so many different types of actions than what you had before.
And even more simply with Gasol, he's basically made 40% of his threes over the last two seasons. So I think it's, 80 for 200 with the Raptors. So if he's, you know, offensively, he's spaced out. The Lakers didn't have that before, right? That's one option. And then you want the dunker spot, bring Harrell in. And so it's such a nice yin and yang there, depending on how you want to attack a defense. And then the one thing though, that I think is that I'm going to ask Frank Vogel about, and I'm curious kind of the way that he'll put it. Like the first thing that he said when we interviewed him, when he got the head coaching job, was about rim protection and the verticality in that sense. And that there is a shift now. And I just wonder now, the Lakers still have plenty of it, most notably with AD, LeBron. We mentioned, you know, Mark's still going to block some shots. He's over a block for his career. But that part is interesting to me. Like, what are the subtle little shifts that they do? Do they still pressure the same way on the perimeter with Caruso, with KCP, with the Schroeder, with all these athletic guys that to push back into the paint if Gasol's in a drop coverage? Like that part of it is interesting to me, but it's such a plethora of riches that it's not like a concern. It's just an interest level for me as to how they change, if at all, or I shouldn't say if at all, how they change and evolve defensively.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this was the thing where I'm like, it doesn't fit Vogel's philosophy historically, this roster defensively, right? So we've talked about the no roller behind idea, right? The idea that you're the big man on the hedge, and that's either Dwight Howard or JaVale last year, or Anthony Davis. Let's say it's Dwight. And so he's hedging on a guard on a pick and roll. And then the guy that Dwight was guarding, the big man that set the screen, starts to roll. And Dwight's job is to not let him get behind him, hence no roller behind. To be able to do that, you got to be able to jump, right? Because those roll guys, as they're rolling into the basket, what's the first option for the guard, as a passer at least, is to lob that up for the dunk. And so you can't play no roller behind with Marc Gasol. He doesn't have the hops to be able to do that. Or although I'd be curious to hear Lakers coaches, maybe they could explain to me why he could. But that vertical plane, he's not going to be able to control that as much. Trez to me is more like, Trez can get up in the air, but he's more laterally explosive. And so Vogel's challenge will be to play guys to their strengths and to put them in positions to succeed. So like, one of the things I've seen about Trez is that he's actually really good on blitzes. And it makes sense. Like, what makes an offensive player special is usually what makes them have the most potential on defense. So Montrezl Harrell is explosive. He's just naturally an explosive guy. So there's this one play against Dallas in the playoffs, right, where he did not play particularly well, but they blitzed, and they hadn't blitzed the whole series with Trez at that point. They blitz at the Luka at the top of the key, who had been killing them. And so a blitz is a trap, right? You got two guys on him. They just sprint at Luka like, you're going to pass the ball. And Luka, being Luka, whips this incredible two-handed pass to the corner. And the tag guy, who had to come over to help on the guy who's rolling to the basket, that was his man that was in the corner. So now it's like, oh shit, I got to close out to the corner. It's Tim Hardaway Jr. He closes out to the corner, shot fake, ripped through, straight line drive to the basket, right? Trez is at the top of the key, having just blitzed. He's got to sprint all the way back, and he meets Hardaway at the rim, and he blocks the shot. That's a crazy amount of distance to cover in that amount of time. Harrell's got some talent. Like, he's got something to work with there. Can you keep him out of the situations where he's not good? That's going to be Vogel's biggest challenge, not just with Harrell, but just in general, of putting players in units where you could play different styles, right? So we've got our probably mostly drop coverage unit in the first unit, right? KCP's not great on switches, so you're not going to be looking to do that as much with that first unit. In the second unit, you can switch more. I think Harrell's got he's got kind of slow hips. He's on switches, but he's got something you could do there. But can you get him in scrambles? Can you get him defending a weak side shooter who's not like a dribbler? That was one thing, one of the few things I liked that Doc did with him is put him on the weak side on like Brokaw or someone like that, right? And then all of a sudden he's making help rotations and all that. Yeah.
It's that stuff is definitely interesting. What I find myself being less concerned about is almost anything to do with the offense. They could just sort of roll the ball out more or less with the amount of firepower Darius they have on that end. I'm sure we could spend plenty of time on it, but do you agree with that point that they're going to be able to score just fine?
I think they're going to score just fine. I also think one of the things that the Lakers relied on very heavily last season was this idea of, all right, well, LeBron and AD, you guys are going to basically be the fulcrums of the offense. We're not going to do a lot of motioning. We're not going to do a lot of screening. There was some stuff that he did over the course of the playoffs that I thought helped open guys up. But for the most part, it was a lot of, and Pete and I talked about this on the pod a ton, like 90s based basketball, like
isolation, like, post ups.
Like we're going to isolate you. We're going to post you up. We're going to draw help. And then when the help comes, we expect you to make the right play. Right now, sometimes the right play is just, well, I'm bigger and more talented than you. I'm just going to shoot over the top and I'm going to score anyway. Other times the right play is, all right, well, kick out, swing, swing, or, oh, little flare screen action on the weak side, kick to the corner, wide open three. What the Lakers have done, particularly with Schroeder, again, with Schroeder and with Trez, is they've gotten two more players who are very comfortable playing in that style of the LeBron and AD mold, which is I can create my own shot. I can collapse the defense. I can draw help. Right. And on top of that, they can play in pick and roll, which is another action that the Lakers would use, especially with Rondo in the game, in order to try to generate advantage. Right. And so, but that was the gist of what the Lakers were doing offensively. And they have added more players who fit into that idea. And there's not going to be as much, I think, Mike, struggling to put together like 4 or 5 or 6 minute stretches where LeBron is on the bench and saying like, oh, can we tread water offensively? I think it's going to be more, all right, can we approximate what we want to be defensively enough so that our offense then is just going to bludgeon you and play you off of the court. One question I had for both of you, though, is when you think about Harrell as potentially like an approximation of Anthony Davis, right? And you think of Dennis Schroeder as potentially an approximation of LeBron James within these player roles, right? Like lead ball handler.
Ball handler, mm-hmm.
How important do you see these guys as being for like big picture view of all the stuff that we've discussed about 72 game season, short turn around December 22 start date for the league, you know, basically 10 weeks off between when the Lakers won the championship and have to start the season. Talk to me some about where you guys are in terms of how much those two guys specifically help the Lakers, like give their top dogs a little bit extra time off, a game off here or there. I know you don't like the term, Mike, so I'm just going to say it, but let's say LeBron's growing, you know, is a little sore from the game a couple of days ago. And in order to get him back to, you know, 100%, he needs to maybe take a day off.
It feels like you could say that more succinctly. It feels like you could say that in like two words.
No. We're not going No. Those two words have been banned.
Oh.
Yeah. You've been
it's just
overruled.
A lot of words. It's a lot of words to say that idea.
Yeah. So first of all, the Lakers were the fourth best offense in the NBA last year before the bubble. So like there's not that much room in terms of the rest of the NBA for them to grow. Now, Schroeder and Harrell are the two that most directly fit into this. And of course, on a night, just like Koo stepped up into the role last year when LeBron or AD didn't play for whatever reason, sore groin, AD had a bunch of stuff that he dealt with throughout the year and mostly played through. And then Koo's would always literally score 20 points every time that happened. Now, if you have more games that whether those guys are in or not, you've got Harrell or Schroeder. And I think Schroeder can control it a little bit more because he's going to have the basketball more. Of course, those guys can come in and carry that load. And to the point where it's, I'm already thinking about sort of the postseason, like in just in terms of how these guys all fit together. I'm less worried about how they get, like, how they get through the regular season and who's like, there's so much talent that that's going to work itself out. And that's not to say we're not going to labor over what exactly is going to happen, but I'm already thinking about just using the regular season to maximize, to tool around, to show different looks to what does the lineup with Schroeder and AD alone look like? What does the lineup with LeBron and Harrell, how do those two pair opposite? What's Caruso's best use? Not the, especially with Bradley being gone. The one thing I think about there is that Caruso's has less of a chance to have some minutes vultured in that kind of thing, which I think is exciting. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff is so I think about Schroeder and Harrell now as a part of the whole puzzle. And both of these guys now super motivated, and they're coming into a system knowing that this team won last year. And guess who's going to get blame if they aren't playing as well? LeBron always gets blame, right? But still, it's like the guys that didn't win last year. And so that adds a little bit of an extra fire there. So that's part of the stuff that I think is also intriguing about all of these new guys coming in now. And did you guys see LeBron's post on Instagram? And I don't remember exactly what it was, but it Darius, you used the word dog earlier. Like, that's basically what he said, right? About Schroeder and Harrell, like them coming in. That's kind of, that's what they are as dogs. And so that also takes care of a lot of this stuff. If you just come onto this team with this much talent and just be a dog, like, you're going to be a pretty good JP.
So each of these guys fit our culture, right? Like, they're competitors. And that's something that, Schroeder, Harrell, Gasol, Wes Matthews, these are all guys that like bring that on their own. They don't need to, because I think a lot of guys, right? A lot of us are products of our environment, and especially with work, right? Like, to me, these numbers aren't right, but it illustrates an idea, right? Like, that if you take 10 basketball players, three of them are going to bring it every night, no matter what, because that's who they are. Three of them are going to be touch and go, maybe two of them. Then there are a bunch in between. They could go either way, right? If they're in a good environment, you're going to get the good version of them. If they're in a bad environment, you're going to get a version of them that loses focus, that doesn't run the floor as hard, and it's funny, this idea, I really want to have the conversation about Trez, right? Because that was called into question last season with his performance in the bubble. And did he play hard with his competitiveness and all that? Again, for another time. But these are like, Montrezl Harrell is in the NBA because he's got the motor that he has, because he's got the explosion that he has, right? I've been a fan of his since he was at Louisville, right? Where I believe he won a national championship. And he's just a hyper competitive guy. I don't know if you're looking that up, Mike, but I'll look that up in a second.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. So these are guys that bring that to the environment. So from a regular season perspective, and they're 26 and 27 years old, man. Guys.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, they won in 2013, Pete. You're on it.
Yeah.
A guy who has not gotten a lot of shine yet, right? And so we've talked a lot about Marc Gasol. We've talked a lot about Dennis Schroeder. We had a whole pod about him. Pete's foaming at the mouth to like give you a 90-minute clip of, breakdown of Montrezl Harrell's game. A guy I really like is Wes Matthews, man.
Yeah.
Like,
he's the one I'm least like. I'm like, I like Matthews. He's the one I'm least excited about. Talk to me.
It's not about, so he's not an exciting player. So of course no one's excited about him, right? he is when you talk about guys who fit the culture, there is also a hard hat, like do your job, professional mindset that is part of the bloodlines of why this Lakers team was successful last season, right? Like LeBron obviously brought that, AD obviously brought that, but part of the culture of a guy like Avery Bradley and Danny Green and Alex Caruso, I think we saw a bunch of that from KCP last season, right? I thought that Dwight Howard, what like everyone talked about, like, oh, best behavior, Dwight. There was a lot of that with him in terms of what he was bringing like on the court. And that's where I'm excited about Wes Matthews and also just his tenacity to compete defensively. Right. And so he is not the same type of defender as Danny Green. He is not this sort of weak side help defense savant. When you talked about the Lakers have lost shot blocking, they lost shot blocking when Danny Green walked out the door too, because he was one of those guys who was a weak side helper. He would help down a bunch, get a bunch of strip downs, a bunch of challenges on big men from behind and sort of knocking the ball away. He was great at that. But what Wes Matthews does defensively is sort of like what Avery Bradley did, but instead he does it against wings and bigger wing players. I saw him say, you know what, Kawhi Leonard, like, I'm getting in your jersey. Like, yeah, you want to rip 220. Yeah. You want to rip through and drive by me. Well, guess what? You're going to have to muscle me off. And I'm a strong dude too. Right. And so there is a, when you talk about dog and being a dog, right? Like, he doesn't do it with athleticism. He doesn't do it with speed. He's not going to ram the ball down your throat. But what he is going to do is, oh, you try to bring that swing through with like the elbow. He's going to stand in there. He's going to stick his nose in there.
He's going to chest you. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm excited to have a guy like that on the wing defensively, because the Lakers did not have that against bigger wing guys last year outside of LeBron and AD.
I love Matthews. I always have. I think the initial reason, what you just mentioned, Darius, I think that the reason he didn't get drafted is because of some of those measurables, like, you know, his vertical jump and that kind of stuff. And he's like, really? Like, dude, my dad won two chips with the Showtime Lakers. Like, I know what it takes in this league, man. Like, I've seen it since I was a kid. I'm a dog. I work my ass off. And do you guys want to take a guess at his career low percentage from three? Any season is the lowest that he's ever shot from three.
So I feel like this is cursed, because I feel like every Lakers shooter automatically loses 5 to 7% off of there. So yeah. I'm going to say it's going to be in the 2021 season, because that's our karma. But gosh, I'll say 35.5%.
Okay, that's a high mark for a career low, Darius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say probably like 34.4, something like that.
Yeah, so 36%, right? In 2015-16 against Dallas, and he took 6.7 attempts that year and 36%. So for career, he's 38.1% on 5.5 attempts. Like, that is on offense. He's going to be parked out there, and he's not streaky in the sense that he's not going to shoot, you know, he's not like a great shooter where he's going to shoot in the high 40s ever. I mean, his career high, I think, is 40% going back to his, but he's always between 36 and like 39. And he doesn't care if it's playoffs. He has no F's about when he's going to shoot. So that right there plugs in perfectly to what you want from a spacer on offense. And then defensively, as Darius just touched on some of the points, but he ranked third on the Bucks last year in defensive rating. And again, he's not going to pop off the sheet, but for when you get him for the number that they got him in terms of salary, and there I saw, I wish I could remember where I saw it and I could give credit, but his numbers are basically the exact same as Danny Green's from last year, except
I wrote
the contract.
I think you got those numbers right for me.
You know what?
Yeah, that's at 4blueandgold.com. Shout out to you.
It was going around a little bit on the internet, so that you may not have been the only one, but now in my heart, you're the only one saw that. You are the only person that pulled that together. So yeah, man, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of his. And whether that's in a starting role, which I think he can hold up just fine, whether that's in a backup role to Caruso, to Kuzma, to Schroeder, to however Vogel wants to deal with it. That was the kind of thing where, when you look out there and think, okay, how many guys can you is the other team not going to target in a playoff series? Mm-hmm. And if Wes Matthews is on the court, I'm chilling. I'm good. I'm not worried that some team is going to post him up with a big wing and like beat him up down there, like Jimmy Butler, right?
Yeah.
He's one of the guys where I'm feeling just fine about that. So I'm pretty excited about him. Pete, do you want to weigh in on a bit of hesitancy that it sounded like you had?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm the spoiled kid at Christmas, right? And that my biggest complaint about Wes Matthews is that he's not 6'6". And I would love to have a six. Again, I see the look on your.
He's heard this before, right? And that's what's fun about him, right? Because it's kind of like that's the whole reason why I didn't get drafted. All that stuff. So it plays.
But it does matter. It does matter in defensive situations. It does. Jimmy Butler did win a lot of possessions in part because of his size and the size advantage over. And this is something that's important against very few players in the NBA, right? But they tend to be on the better teams and deeper into the playoffs, right? So we do lose something by not having Danny Green's ability to drop down and help to provide back pressure where that guard's got to lean a little bit more forward, right? At, what was it, 2.6 million that he's getting? Like at 3. His 6. Price, 3.6. Yeah. When we were talking in the preview for this, I was talking about how I didn't feel like there was a wing defender out there that I was feeling, and with regards to the MLE in particular, that like, look, I would love Jeremy Grant signed with Detroit for $20 million, right? And like the kind of guy that I wanted was not available for the type of price range that we had. And that's for like, why I was saying, hey, let's go get somebody who's better at a different position, right? And we did exactly that in Montrezl Harrell. And we got a wing defender in Wes Matthews. It's just that's going to matter to some degree. Again, it's
but you just answered your own question though. When that is the like third or fourth player, best player on your roster, that's super important.
Yes.
Okay. Like then it's super if you have to have that guy, and guess what the Lakers have in these tight postseason games? Uh-huh. LeBron or AD, to a lesser extent Kuzma, to a lesser extent KCP, to a lesser extent Caruso. And then like it's, but at the top, yes, you have to have those kind of guys, and they do. But when it's like your 10th, 9th or 10th guy, then you're chilling, which you've also elucidated just fine. So
yeah, again,
we're not disagreeing. We're not disagreeing.
The spoiled kid at Christmas. It's just the one of the few things. We don't have the shot blockers, but that's fine because I think we got a great defender in Marc Gasol. I think that Harrell is going to be much better on defense for us than he was with the Clippers because I think Vogel will put him in more of a position to succeed. Schroeder's got defensive ability. That's the thing, is that everybody that we brought in is good at something on defense. And in Harrell and Schroeder's case, they're both good in the same way. And that I think if you're aggressive on defense with both of those guys, that kind of plays to the things that they do best. So again, spoiled kid on Christmas, just, oh, where's my 6'7" wing defender with a 7'2" wingspan? You know, I'm a Laker fan. So that's like the one of the few things where I'm like, hey, but at that so price
this is,
point,
this is replaced your second. This is replaced the secondary ball handler that you worried about all last year.
No.
That was to, like, text you a million times about like, Pete, it's fine. Like they get to the playoffs.
To be fair, we started last season with Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels in the rotation. And yes, we got better, and Alex Caruso did not get the
MVPs. Was it fine? Was it fine or not?
It was absolutely fine, Mike. You were right. You were right. However, I'm worried about this way less than I was worried about that.
Okay. And I just make one
more. That's good for, yeah.
Can I just make one more point about Wes, in that I like his build, even against bigger wings. I know that bigger guys will be able to shoot over the top of him. What I like about Wes specifically against those bigger guys is his strength, is his lower.
Oh, D, do you know how much he weighs? It almost surprised me in the press release.
Like, what is he, 230?
He's listed at 220.
So 220. He, like, he may, and like 6'4", 220. That's a big dude.
That's a big base. I just wanted to underscore Darius's point there. Like that's some solid base there.
And he's got a low center of gravity. So Pete, one of my basketball philosophies is always that basketball is almost always about angles, and it's about being able to get to a spot on the floor where you have created the separation, right? Of all the stuff I loved about Kobe Bryant It was his understanding of angles and his ability to say, you know what, like this is actually a 30 degree angle that I need to take instead of that 45, because when I take that shorter angle, I am getting to this spot instead of that spot. And when I'm at this spot, I'm going to score easier, right? And it was a mind game with him as much as it was a physical game. And when you have a player like Matthews, who is shorter, but is stockier and is stronger, the angles you have to take in order to get by a guy like that are different, because he's playing lower and he is able to take something away that against guys who are like-sized, you get easier against those guys. It's the thing that I always have talked to you about Shaq, for example, that it wasn't all those years that people were just like, oh yeah, let's load up on the Jerome Jameses and the Ostertags and the Dikembe Mutombos and Jim all of McElvain. Those guys, right? Yep. All those guys who were the same height as Shaq. Shaq just brutalized those dudes. The dudes he did not brutalize were the Dennis Rodmans, the Malik Roses.
They were stylistically different than he was.
The low base guys, low base guys.
Like the low base guys, right? Yeah, because those guys played wider. They got underneath his hips and it was harder to move those guys. And so when you're talking about power wings, I don't necessarily always want the 6'7 or 6'8 guy. One of the reasons why LeBron is just a freak of nature is that not only is he 6'9, but he's freaking 260 pounds. And so when he decides he's going to play with a wide base, guess what? You're not moving that dude at all. You're bouncing off of him. And he's going to control the space. And that's the part about Matthews that I like. And so Danny Green was tall, but he was also strong and wide, right?
It fits
and
with
so,
like Gasol. It fits with like Gasol versus JaVale too, right? Same thing with that. Yes. That's why Jokic, right, can have some more success against JaVale, but he's not going to be able to move Mark in that same way, right?
Right. Right.
And so that's one of the things I like about Wes that I think is going to be a nice little wrinkle that the Lakers did not have outside of LeBron last year when you're talking about defensive wings, because Danny's strength, as much as he was good, was more off-ball strength, right? Like, yes. Oh, you're trying to move me? Like the way that Duncan Robinson was like pushing around Alex Caruso some and pushing around KCP some in order to move off of screens. You're not pushing off a guy like Wes Matthews, just like they weren't pushing off Danny Green that same way. So that functional strength is going to matter. And I'm glad they got a player like Matthews who can hold up in all of those different types of situations because of his strength. So I think it can be an advantage to him a little bit.
As you're explaining that, I'm realizing that Matthews plays into the same, like Matthews in the context of wing defense plays into the same idea of, if we don't have a guy, if you can't defend this guy because of your limitations, we have another guy who does. Now, this is something that like neither, the other guy is not elite at it, but if Matthews is great at having that strong base and is great at holding his spot, but is being shot over the top of, right? Something about his height is what is being burned by that particular player, that particular team. You know who's really good in those circumstances is Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah.
That's the guy. Kyle Kuzma is weak against somebody who can go through him, right? So Wes Matthews is the natural counter, the natural complement to Kyle Kuzma's defense.
That's a good
point. If somebody's going through Kyle Kuzma, he's not going through Wes Matthews. If somebody's going over the top of Wes Matthews, they're not going over the top of Kyle Kuzma because he's got that complementary height, right? So now there are a couple of guys I think of, like Kevin Durant or Jimmy Butler. Like neither guy I don't think can guard can guard those guys. But that's, I think, when we get more into the AD and LeBron type territory. But
yes,
the point is that we've got all of these guys who are capable of being stars in their role and who have very clearly defined things that they do well. And that in the context of role players is really important.
And what we learned last year is that, and this is, it's fun for us to have all these discussions, but like the good news for the Lakers is that Vogel is good at figuring this stuff out. And so that's why the closing lineup shifted so much during the regular season is that he figured out which within each matchup and as the course of the game went on that, okay, you need a little bit more base down low. Like Pete just mentioned with Wesley Matthews, this is a good matchup for him to be the guy that's more likely on the floor in that situation. You know what? This is more of a Caruso game. This is more of a Trez right. at the 580 at the four game. This is more of a Mark, like against Denver, it's probably more of a Marc Gasol matchup or expand that to a playoff series. You know, maybe Wes Matthews is needed a little bit more against the Clippers. If you think about Kawhi, you know, and Paul George. So like these are all things that were considered when Pelinka and Vogel and the rest of the brain trust sat down. And there are a lot of answers, Darius, out there for whatever comes their way. And there isn't another West team. There are teams that got better. We talked about that a little bit. Portland got better. Dallas got better. Some other teams, Phoenix got better, but there isn't a team that got better, that was already as good as the Lakers and then also got better in my opinion. Yeah.
I'm just excited, man. For all the talk about running it back that we had just, you know, a few weeks ago, and the Lakers have built really a similar but divergent team than the one that they won the championship with. I think that this team can be so good. I also think that when you have LeBron and AD, you have the luxury of building divergent teams that can win in a totally different style, right? And reminds me some of like when LeBron went from those Heat teams that played one style, and then he went to the Cavaliers team that played a totally different style. And both teams won a championship. Both teams were at the top of the league, if not in terms of winning it all, but like right there as a contending team. And the Lakers, I think, are showing that we were a defense heavy team last year. We can be a more offensively skewed team this year while still having defensive identity and compete for a championship. And if there's an idea of anything that I'd love to close with, it's just that the Lakers again built a contending team. And Pete, you and I didn't talk about, I think we had a podcast titled "The Lakers Are Championship Contenders." And that was maybe like 40 or 45 games into the season. Now, the Lakers are grandfathered into the contender discussion based off the fact that they just won a championship. But there could have been a bunch of ways where they took like real steps backward just based off of limitations and who they could or could not sign. If they held over too many guys and didn't necessarily improve, that's not what happened. They did not get complacent. They shot for the stars again in terms of trying to build up their talent base. They got younger, they got more athletic in key positions, and they are not quite running it back, but they are running forward all the same. And they look like a damn good basketball team. They got to play the games, of course, but I'm excited, man.
Yeah, got to do the work. Got a long road ahead of us. But boy, oh boy, if the job of a front office is to put together a talented team that represents a bunch of different skill sets, hard to think they could have done any better than they've done so far, and still got a few moves to go. This pod could be 3 hours long, but we're going to wrap it up here. We will be back on Wednesday with our general NBA pod. A lot's going on around the league, so we'll hit a lot of that. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable.
for the victory. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.